This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Both of my guests left home and rode the rails back in the 1930s during the Great Depression. They're both featured in the new documentary, Riding the Rails. Jim Mitchell left his home in Wisconsin when he was 16. Peggy DeHart left her home in Wyoming when she was 15. He later served in World War II and made promotional films for the auto industry. She later ran a business with her husband and became a missionary in Trinidad. Peggy DeHart now lives in Spokane, Washington, and Jim Mitchell in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Jim Mitchell told me why he started riding the rails.
The railroad was the quickest way to get away from the misery of home. That's the simple answer is that get away from the unemployment, the relief lines. So we got on. So you go down, you grab a passenger train, and head on down the road. Of course, you were about 30, 40 minutes into the ride, why you were cold and miserable, and if it were raining, you were in a mess, and so you wish you were home, but you'd made your decision, and so that was it. Basically, you did it to just get away from, I did it to get away from the misery of the Depression.
Peggy DeHart, how did you end up riding the rails?
I was working with my father. We lived on a ranch in Wyoming, and very little money at hand, and I was in high school and had no money for clothes, and I was helping my dad milk, and an old cow switched me in the eye with her dirty tail, and I got up and whopped her one and cussed her out, and my dad came across the aisle and slapped me, and I said, I'll leave home, and he says, you'll be back for supper. And about a week later, I went to work for a neighbor for $1 a week, and I worked 2.5 weeks and took my $2.50 and left with another girl to hitchhike and ride freight trains to Issaquah, Washington. I was gone 33 days, and on the 33rd day, I was home in time for supper.
Jim, how long were you gone?
Oh, these would be various sorties. I'd go out, and I'd be gone for 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes a month, and then I'd come home, and you'd be around, then you'd take off again. It was no long protracted, and this went on for about a year and a half.
Would you each remember for me the very first time you jumped a train?
Sure. First time I damn near got killed. I went down to the railroad station with a buddy of mine. What you do is you get to the head of the platform and you wait, and when the conductor says abort, then you wait, and the engine starts up, when it gains speed and gets up toward the end of the platform, you run for the ladder on the back of the tender and up and into the blind of the first car. And I'll never forget, it was either the first or second sortie out. I was riding the blind with an old bum across from me, and we each snuggled into our own side and held on for dear life. About a couple of stops down the road, an old beau got on that he was a pretty scruffy character, and he looked, and there was no place in the blind, and he had to put his foot around the ladder going up the tender, and so he had a bag wrapped up in a rope, and he put it up on top of the tender, and he says, watch my bag, kid. And I said, not a chance, because I had all I could do to take care of myself. Well, the wind and the rattling of the rails pretty soon took that bag and smashed it against the car, and down into the wheels went all of this man's possessions. And with fire in his eye, he dashed over toward me, and he says, damn kid, I told you to watch my bag. And this old beau, I don't know who he is, but I owe my... He stepped between us, and he says, you touch the kid, and I'll kill you. And the guy turned stone white, went back, and that's one of my first trips on the train, and I'll never forget it. And wherever that old beau is, I owe my life to him.
Jim, would you describe what the blind and the tender are that you're referring to?
Well, if you've seen motion pictures, there's an engine, a big black steel thing up in the front, driven by steam, and back of that is a tender that holds water and coal for creating the steam, and then that is hooked up to the first car. And the blind is literally the door opening. It's where the door is, and it's the coupling between the two cars. And if it's the first car right in back of the tender, the blind, it'll be open, so you can stand in there sort of a little bit out of the wind and weather.
So when you were riding in the blind of the car, you were actually riding more or less in between two cars.
That's
holding
right.
On for
you
dear
were riding.
Life.
Yes, you were riding between the first car and the tender of the engine.
And Peggy, would you remember for us the first time you jumped a train?
Yes, I was in Cokeville, Wyoming, which end of the world, and my girlfriend with she was 17, I was 15, and we were going up the road and having little luck in catching thumbing a ride, and it was because we were too close to the state line. And we walked by the stockyards, and here were some bums cooking a pot of stew and had coffee. And they asked us if we were hungry, and we always said yes. And we went in and ate with them. And they said, well, you kids are going to have trouble getting out of here because that state line's so close. And in the 30s, people were very leery about carrying people over a state line, especially young girls. And so they said, why don't you just catch a freight with us? We'll help you. And so the freight came in, and the water pump, the water where the steam engine watered up was right there. And they came in to water up, and we caught they helped us into a big car that had been hauling wheat, and there was paper inside of the walls. And so they helped us on, and as we left the station, we were all four sitting in the door of this boxcar, and I was swinging my legs, and suddenly this one man slapped my shins and says, keep your legs down. You hit a switch on the railroad, it'll jerk you right off into eternity. And so I learned real quick, but they were very kind to us, and we rode that thing all that night and all the next day, into the next evening to Nampa, Idaho. They taught us how to roll up in the paper from the walls to shield ourselves from the wind and the cold at night. And it did get cold at night, even though this was in late July.
Did you find it hard to jump on a train that was moving?
Yes, it was. At Nampa, we had to change trains. And at the jungle where we were, there was a kind of an amphitheater, and it was filled with men. There was men everywhere. I have no idea how many. But there was only one boxcar on the whole train that was open, and it was there in front of that amphitheater. And the bulls were pacing up and down with their lanterns and their rifles. And
the bulls were the train cops.
Yes, the railroad cops. Uh-huh. And so when the train started, when it jerked loose, this whole body of people rose up like one person and rushed for that door, and I was the first one there. And somebody, I have no idea who, picked me up by the nape of my neck and my seat of my pants and pitched me into that car. And my girlfriend was right behind me, and she was carrying a tin suitcase of all things. We crawled into a corner and set that suitcase up in front of us. It was very dark in there, and these two men, one of them called out my name, and I answered, and they came and sat in front of us.
Did men prey on you while you were on the road?
No, I never had any, not riding the rails. We had one incident in a car. Of course, I was a kid, and I looked like a kid, and people give me their change out of their pockets and fed us, you know, every time they had an opportunity.
Jim, would you describe for me what it was like on a typical freight train when you were on a freight train in a boxcar with other people?
The thing Peggy was talking about, wrapping up in papers and so forth, we call those were known pejoratively as Hoover blankets, and it was a way to keep warm. And paper is a wonderful way to keep warm. Most of the freight trains we ever rode on, we either rode on the top or we rode in empty cars,
mm-hmm.
And I must confess, I never rode with, there were not a lot of people on the trains that we rode on.
Jim, how would you decide where you wanted to go?
You didn't. You got on and you went. You didn't care where you went. You had no destination. Mm-hmm. There was no destination. It was just like, how did we know in the Depression, how did we know it was ever going to end? We didn't know what was going to happen during the Depression. Isn't that, I think that's safe to say, I think. Isn't it, Peggy? We did. No, nobody knew.
Well, I did. I had a goal. When I left Wyoming, I was headed for Issaquah, Washington. So place where this girl's parents lived.
Okay.
So we did have a goal. And so when someone asked us where we were going, we could always say home, either direction, because one of us had a home in that direction.
Right.
So we did have a goal.
Yeah. Well, you're getting you're getting two different perspectives on the Depression. As a matter of fact, if I may I put from my perspective, could I put the Depression in perspective?
Please go
because,
ahead.
See, in the 20s, when I was 10, 11 years old, here Lindbergh had just flown across the Atlantic. My father was working 5.5 days a week. Everything was rosy. The radio was coming, and the world was bright and cheerful. Then hit 29, and things started to fall apart, and slowly the country started to deteriorate. And so it was from that perspective that I left and went bumming on the road. Because when I was a boy, about 15, my father came home. I'll never forget this. He came home early one morning, and I was on my way to school, and he came in, and I heard him come in, and he put his lunch bucket on the table, and the first time I ever saw my father cry, he was out of work. And it was from that perspective that you wanted to get on the train and go. You wanted to get away. At least I did.
Jim, what did your parents think of you going on the road? Your father was out of work. The family was hit hard by the Depression. But did they approve of you riding the rails?
I never was scolded for it. I was never lectured to about leaving. I just, they trusted me. I'm certain that my parents trusted me. They didn't. And
was it one less mouth to feed? Was it a relief in a way?
That's pretty much the size of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
That you could put it that way. And my father was busy every day standing in long unemployment and employment lines trying to get what little bit of work he could. And so when you were gone, that was another. And they knew I was able to take care of myself, so they never really worried about me. So when I came home, I was welcomed home again, and when I left, you just left.
Peggy, did you worry about your parents panicking when you took off?
Well, of course I thought about that. I know all about depression because our income, our liquid income, was probably $300 a year. We were on a ranch, so we had our own milk, butter, and eggs. And there were three things that would always grow, corn, beans, and potatoes. So we had three things that we could always eat. And so we never knew. There was just no money, and that's why I left. I wanted to earn some money to buy some clothes for high school. I rode 4 miles horseback to catch a bus to go into high school. We didn't consider ourselves poor because everybody where we lived the same way.
Did either of you succeed in making money, which you both set out to do?
No.
You ask about making money. There was one source of income, at least for boys, and that were carnivals. And you'd go and you'd hook up with a carnival and you'd for the night and you'd work as a shill. And you could pick up a dollar or two and that'd hold you over for a while.
My guests are Jim Mitchell and Peggy DeHart. They both were teenage hobos during the Depression. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Peggy DeHart and Jim Mitchell, two of the people featured in the new film Riding the Rails, a documentary about teenage hobos during the Depression. Jim, did you ever stay in one of the hobo jungles? Did you do that often?
I stayed a couple of nights. I've stayed in them and slept under the trees, but I didn't stay very long. I didn't like them because they were the characters among them. They were too weird for me.
Mm-hmm. Would you describe one of the nights that you stayed there, what it looked like physically, what it was like to be there?
Well, physically, in this one, I would guess we came down off the railroad track into this thicket, and there were two or three fires and people cooking what they called in mulligan stew. That's probably where it got started, was in the jungles, and some fellas shared their supper with us that night, and we had a little bedroll and We went over and some fellas had a lean. There was a lean-to made out of some metal roofing, and leaned over. And so we were in there. We stayed that night. It was not very memorable, and it was pretty miserable. I didn't like it at all.
Where did you stay when you weren't staying in one of the jungles?
You'd stay in a barn. You'd stay in barns. Sleep. Sometimes you'd even sleep in a jail. And you'd go in, and the first time we learned this trick, you'd go into a small town, and you'd go into the. You hear you're a kid about 15, 16 years old, and so you go into the policeman and you smile at him and say, "What's the smallest crime I can commit that'll put me in overnight?" And 9 out of 10 times he'd smile and he'd say, "Come on, follow me." And he'd take you back and he'd say, "Sorry, but I've got to lock you up." And then you'd go in the cell and he'd lock the door, and there you'd stay during the night. Next morning he'd let you out and you'd go and have some cup of coffee with the guys and take off and go down and find a restaurant there where you could get a meal or try to earn some money and buy a few rolls for some coffee.
Peggy, I have a question for you that might seem a little indiscreet, but when men are riding the rails and they have to relieve themselves, they can kind of, you know, do it fairly easily. It's much more difficult for a woman, especially a woman in a male subculture. What did you do when you were riding the train for many hours at a shot and you had to relieve yourself?
Only one time that I did, and that was on the first railroad ride, the first boxcar that we rode from Cokeville, Wyoming to Nampa, Idaho. And there was paper in the room and in the boxcar, and there was only the four of us. And so my girlfriend would hold up this big sheet of paper torn from the walls to make a little privacy. And then I would do the same for her. But I did not relieve myself all the way from Nampa, Idaho to La Grande, Oregon. There was no way. Wow. There was too many men in the car. And none of them did, to my knowledge, either.
Huh. I'm wondering if you both felt when you were on the road that you were turning into people you didn't recognize. You know, you were unable to bathe. You had no money. You had little or no food. You were being chased by the police and driven out of town and sleeping in jail.
I think for me, it gave me more confidence to know that I could survive away from my family. It gave me confidence to know that even though there's a big world out there that you can survive, and you don't have to have somebody helping you at home. You don't have to have four walls around you to be confident and to be able to get by. I mean, it helped me in later years to have a stamina to stand some of the rigors that I've had to gone through.
Jim, what about you? Did you feel like you were turning into somebody you didn't recognize?
From my perspective, being on the road really was sort of like being in a fog. It was a means of getting away. And I doubt if I psychoanalyzed myself. You just drifted, as far as I was concerned. And as far as being self-sufficient, of course, I never thought much about that. I always thought that I was fairly well self-sufficient.
Jim, you got off the road by joining the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, which was part
right.
of FDR's FDR's programs to get
right.
the country out of the Depression. Would you briefly describe what the CCC was like and what it offered to you as a teenager?
First place, the Civilian Conservation Corps, it was administered by the United States Army, and I was lucky to serve under people who treated you with what's today called tough love. Man, I don't know. I wish I knew whatever happened to him. The man by the name of Captain J.B. Entringer. I don't know what would have happened to me if I hadn't had his guidance and discipline. And we were first camp we lived in. We were up in Merrill, Wisconsin, at Camp Newwood, and we did roadside clearing. We put in fire lanes. Did stream renewal And we did a lot of, there was a lot of soil conservation work done. You know, I think it's fair to say that I doubt if the park system we have in America today would be in existence if it had not been for the Civilian Conservation Corps, because we left Newwood, we went down to Wausau and built Camp Rib Mountain State Park. And I stayed in there till I was 19 years old, and then I went back to high school.
Did you each tell your children when you had children about your experiences during the Depression?
Not until they were grown.
You waited that long?
Yes.
Jim?
Well, you try to tell them, but they don't understand, and you can't explain it to them. You know, they've got all the food they want, they've got all the money they want, they've got cars, they've got everything. How can you explain when you don't have anything? That's why I don't know what would happen to this country if we ever hit another depression. I just can't imagine.
Peggy, why did you wait till your children were grown to tell them?
Well, I didn't want them doing the same thing. And it was a different era, too. So I didn't want the romance of the thing to get to them in their teenage years.
I bet they were shocked when they found out what their mother had done.
Well, I think they were somewhat, yes.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
Okay. Thank you for asking.
Thank you.
Peggy DeHart and Jim Mitchell are both featured in the new documentary Riding the Rails about teenage hobos during the Depression. The film opens September 5th in Los Angeles, September 12th in New York. It will open in other cities over the next couple of months.